what Netanyahu did is after the meeting with Rubio, gives authorization to launch the ground invasion of Gaza City, massive bombings, killing of Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
That may, you know, here's Rubio. Everybody in that Arab Islamic summit, they're going to say he was just, he carried the message and gave Bibi the right, gave him permission to do that. So that now puts him, it damages his credibility, because anytime he wants to go talk to these other characters, they're going to go, yeah, you're just a whore for Israel. That's all you are. You're just a bag carry. You do what Donald Trump tells you, and Donald Trump is completely bought and paid for by Bibi Netanyahu. So the United States ends the day yesterday, I think, weaker, more isolated in the Middle East than at any time in its history.
Larry Johnson, Sonar 21. Good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
Hey, I thought I wore out my welcome last time, but I'm back.
No,
like,
you...
Like you're, like crabgrass or an STD, okay?
No, you've become a go-to for me. And to all my viewers and listeners, I was telling my friend Steve, who is also on this interview discussion here, just how much respect I have for Larry. And Larry used to be on all the major networks giving his opinion. And then to my benefit, for one reason or the other, he's going on. It's probably because he's way too honest. So, Larry, we want your honest opinion on a lot of stuff that's going on in the world. And let's start with Charlie Kirk. To me, I mean, again, I don't have an opinion, but I want to know the truth or your opinion or get to the truth here. Is this, tell me what your thoughts are on that. Was this just related to the shooter, or is this go deeper than that to other nefarious situations that are going on in the world?
No, I think it goes deeper than that. His, at least what they laid out in the press conference today, his motivation was his hatred of Charlie Kirk because of Charlie Kirk's views about transgenders, which for the record, I share Charlie Kirk's views on transgenders. I think it's a mental illness. It's made possible in this modern age because we have so many people that have never lived on a farm. Because if you ever lived on a farm and have been around cows and bulls, dogs, chickens, and pigs, you know, name the animal, you'd never come across a transgender animal of any kind. They're usually one or the other, male or female. We live in this modern world where we're divorced from that reality. I personally believe, well, it's not, I don't have to believe this either. They have presented evidence that, Robinson was in conversation and on this Discord channel and with this other Blue Sky channel, and that there was knowledge outside of just, Mr. Robinson and his live-in boyfriend / girlfriend, that, he was going to kill or try to kill Charlie Kirk. So it was known in advance. The evidence that was presented today at this press conference, I think, is very compelling and helps clear out a lot of doubt. One, I had assumed wrongly that he had disassembled the rifle at some point, may have had it in his backpack. Now they've shown he actually had it stuffed down his right pant leg and was walking. And as he was walking with what appeared to be a noticeable limp, but the limp was caused by the gun. And I have seen other videos from other people who have tried to replicate this, and you get the same effect. And it doesn't prevent you from climbing the stairs. So people say, well, we didn't see the gun bulging out on the stair climb. Well, you never really saw his legs, and you never had a video, a film of it. You had still photos. Second was the question, well, you don't see him with the rifle in his hand when he runs away. Well, actually, you do see he had it wrapped in a green towel. You do see him put something down before he jumps off the roof and then drops it to the ground. So the claim that he didn't have time to disassemble the rifle, that's irrelevant. He didn't disassemble. He carried it with him, had it covered in a towel. He stored it in the woods in a text message with his... I said boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, the relationship. in the text message, he admitted he had put it in the woods. He was waiting, but there the police presence around. He was waiting for the police presence to dissipate so he could go back and get it. In terms of how he selected that site, they haven't released evidence on that. I guarantee you they will show. He had scouted that position in advance. He knew roughly the distance he would be shooting. He had zeroed the rifle probably for at least 100 yards. So if you zero a rifle at 100 yards, that means when you look through the scope and you get those little crosshairs, you put the crosshairs in the center of the target and you shoot at 100 yards, it'll hit the middle of the target. If you shoot out to 200 yards, and if you're shooting at like the center of that target, the bullets will actually hit about 4 to 5 inches below at 200 yards. So that's because the curvature of the earth and the way the trajectory of the bullet, it's a curve, it's not a straight line. Which would, if he was aiming at the head,
that would make sense
down here. Now, I've seen some videos going on. He was shot from behind. This guy says, I'm a former Marine. Well, I got, news for that former Marine. I've got, I am a rifle instructor. I train instructors. I was fortunate to train. One of my students was a Marine Corps sniper, also a Navy medic. And this guy whose video is circulating, getting a lot of attention, undeservedly, is claiming, that was an entrance wound. You don't see that kind of blood or that was an exit wound. He said, you don't see that out of an entrance wound. Nonsense. Like I said, don't take my word for it. I talked to my student who was a combat medic and saw people with gunshots, treated people with gunshots. What you see in that is, if you slow it down as slow as you can, like frame by frame, the first thing you see is movement, upward movement on Charlie's shirt. Now, when you run at normal speed, it all happens like that. It all happens seemingly at once. But the first thing is you get this movement upward of his shirt. Well, around a bullet traveling that fast through the air pushes air ahead of it. It creates, it's like a vector that comes off of it. A shockwave. Mm-hmm. That shockwave hits first, then the bullet hits. Mm-hmm. Well, trace the path of that bullet. It's going to enter here to the side of your neck, and it's going to go somewhere near, either hit your spine or go out near it, create a shockwave. Well, you watch what Charlie's head does. Hmm. I'm sorry to go into this detail, but it's in order to refute some of this bullshit that's out there. Punch yourself, slightly in the neck. Which way does my head go? Does my head go back? No, you get hit here, your head is gonna go forward. Mm-hmm. Try the same thing on the back of your neck. Hit yourself in the back of the head. Your head is gonna snap back. It's a neuromuscular reaction. Mm-hmm. So he first gets hit, head goes forward, then as the bullet hits the spinal cord, stiffens up like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a neurological reaction. That is a neurological. It's caused by damage to the spine. But then the massive amount of blood, when you hit the carotid like that, unless you had a special kind of treatment where you could there is a compound out there, I'm told it's been recently developed, that you could actually plug that, if you were there immediately and within 3 to 4 seconds, you could plug the wound, you might staunch the bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they have done that, the odds that Charlie would have been a quadriplegic, very high. Brain damage, also significant. I mean, it was a god-awful thing. And, mm-hmm. From my position as a firearms instructor, when I train people to use firearms for self-defense,
mm-hmm.
you may kill somebody only under two circumstances, that they are threatening you with the imminent loss of your life or grievous bodily harm, or they're threatening someone else an innocent person nearby with the same thing. If they're threatening to kill you or to cause grievous bodily harm, you can kill them. If you don't like what they say, too damn bad. You call them names, walk away, but there's never, never any justification for killing anyone, right or left, just because you don't like what they say. You know, it's one thing to say that I disagree with transgenders. I think they're absolutely wrong. But that doesn't mean you go out and kill them, because that's murder. That's wrong. So, and so what was done, what this exposed in terms of this crazed hatred on the extreme left directed at Charlie Kirk, you know, they like say, oh, he's a Nazi, he's full of hatred. And yet what it's doing now is drawing people to his channel, and they're watching the videos from him in the past. And once you, if you watch those videos, you know, the ones I've seen, you never see him calling anybody name. You know, he doesn't insult their mother's sexual past. He doesn't, you know, do any kind of ad hominem.
Yeah, he's very respectful.
Yeah. He says, hey, okay, we'll talk it out. Mm-hmm. In fact, one I saw yesterday that popped up was that one of his Turning Point events, one of his members in the audience was talking about actually doing something, taking very vindictive actions on homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's Charlie Kirk, this very religious, you know, people say a right-wing Christian. And what did he say to that? He didn't go, no, he goes, hey, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, and he defended homosexuals and pointed out, hey, we've got a number of prominent conservatives, Trump supporters who are homosexuals. Are we going to lock them up?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, he took a very measured approach. He didn't back down from his viewpoint, but he also didn't tell the person who was asking the question. He says, you know, you're a dumb jackass. No, none of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's really very tragic about this is to eliminate a voice where it was trying to present, we can have a reasoned discussion without having to go to violence.
Right. Well, and it really, I guess, it shows, I think, the amping up of the rhetoric, but now also violence, really. Do you see this as, you know, splitting the country more apart than it is and leading to potentially more violence?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually do. I think it is the number of people, broad spectrum, from military officers, police, medical professionals, educators, that have come out gleeful about the murder of Charlie Kirk. I mean, it's just, to me, it's unfathomable. You know, how could you hold that? Now, there's another subtext here. And this is written by Max Blumenthal and his wife, Anya Parampil, the Zionist connection. Now, there were some early on that claimed that that this was an Israeli and Mossad operation. It was not Mossad that pulled or pressed the trigger on this. However, is it possible that Mossad was involved with an information operation in the United States designed to gin up anger at Charlie Kirk for his anti-Zionist, emerging anti-Zionist position? Because what we've now got Candace Owens, who was very close with Charlie, you know, worked with him in the very beginning of Turning Point, and things she knew that happened in early August, where Charlie was out in the Hamptons in, you know, Long Island, met with Bill Ackman, the billionaire, multi-billionaire owner of Pershing Square, and Ackman reportedly very acrimoniously attacked Charlie, and they were making threats, you know, pulling money, et cetera, because Charlie had the audacity to allow Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly come to Turning Point USA and made remarks that were connecting Israel to Jeffrey Epstein, as well as raising questions about why the United States should take a second place to Israel, that it should be America first, not Israel first. And then that Charlie allowed a debate with Dave Smith, a comedian who is Jewish but very anti-Zionist, against Josh Hammer. And that was all the effect on the audience was that, you know, probably two-thirds of the kids there, you know, I'll call them kids. If you're under 40, you're a kid. Two-thirds of the kids there were applauding Dave Smith, liked what he had to say, which is a sign that this political movement that Charlie is building, it has a large segment that do not like the Zionist genocide that's being inflicted on the Palestinians. And you know, the irony here is early on, Turning Point USA was funded by a lot of Zionist money. And Charlie, in his early days, was very much pro-Israel. Israel could do no wrong. Now what we've seen in sort of the last couple of months was Charlie, his position was evolving. And mm-hmm. he was beginning to entertain and raise questions about what was Israel doing and could they really be relied upon? And why should they take first place in lieu of America? So was there, let's say, an Israeli hand in encouraging the anger among the transgenders against Charlie? Perhaps. Mm-hmm. I can't rule it out. I mean, it's not like Israel can make the claim, we've never tried to kill an American politician. The evidence, circumstantial evidence in the death of JFK and RFK is pretty significant.
Yeah. Well, it is also interesting, too, is, and again, this might have just been a pure coincidence, which I'm very happy to accept. And again, I'm my motivation is just to try to find some answers. But over right before then or during this time, I don't know the exact timeline, but Israel starts bombing Qatar.
Yeah.
And then right after that, they want peace. And there's like this called, I don't know who instigated it, but they called a Middle East summit saying we want peace, which was rejected. Talk about that and work that out.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So that's actually, fits into a broader meme, but I don't think they're necessarily related. What happened in Qatar is significant because it really exposed this tactic that the United States and Israel had been using. I call it, it's like a salt lick for a deer. You know, in some states in the United States, it's illegal to put a salt during deer hunting season, to put a salt lick out in the middle of a field to attract deer, because the deer will come out to the salt lick, and once you got them there, then you can kill them. Mm-hmm. Well, what the United States and Israel have been doing, and probably it goes back to the day when General Soleimani of Iran was killed under Donald Trump's orders, where we would talk about, hey, let's get together, let's have this meeting date for this, to discuss a peace accord, a ceasefire, whatever. And then once you have the date, location, and time fixed, then Israel is able to launch a strike to kill them. That's what they did to Sheikh Nasrallah, the former leader of Hezbollah. That's what was done to the Israeli cabinet. The Iranian cabinet on June 13th, when Israel launched a surprise attack on Iran. Mm-hmm. And that's what was done here in this case with the Hamas leadership. The United States said, hey, you know, here's our ceasefire proposal. Why don't you guys meet on Monday and talk it over? Then we tell the Israeli, okay, you're good to go. Now, it's clear that a foreign intelligence service friendly to Hamas became aware of that plan. Some have suggested it was Turkey, could have been Iran, could have been Russia, could have been China. Some foreign intelligence service became aware of it. They alerted Hamas. But again, once you've uncovered, you know, been able to extract intelligence like that, you don't want to tell them, don't show up, because then that gives away, everyone's going to realize, okay, maybe we were compromised. Mm-hmm. No, so they showed up, but they left their phones behind, and their story afterwards was, oh, we didn't get killed because we left our phones in the meeting room. We went to pray. Good cover for action. Israel, let's give Israel and the United States credit for something by virtue of carrying out this attack on Qatar. And understand that Qatar has been the host to this massive U.S. military base, Al Udeid Air Force Base. It's the forward headquarters for CENTCOM. It's the forward headquarters for the Air Command that conducts and monitors all air operations in the entire region. So we're talking Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, Yemen, Iraq, Iran. It covers that whole area. I had a friend of mine was stationed there, and you know he said every day, this was back in like 2016. Every day the U.S. General would be on the phone with the Russian general, deconflicting, making sure they didn't shoot at each other and they didn't fly into the same material. So the point of that is nothing's going to fly over Qatar unless the United States says it can, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not up to the Qatari authorities. This is a U.S. military call. And so the fact that 10 Israeli F-35s could come roaring in to launch missiles on a residential area in Qatar, the United States absolutely knew, complicit, no doubt whatsoever. Where Trump, and I believe this is how it went down. They had briefed Trump in advance what was going to happen and told him, man, we'll kill the Hamas negotiators. That'll eliminate that as an obstacle. You'll be able to negotiate a deal. This would be great. You'll be praised. And he went along. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Then, boom, the attack comes. It fails. They're still alive. Sort of like that scene in Godfather 1 when Sollozzo's got the lawyer, Hagen, and says, hey, you go make the deal now that the Godfather's dead. And then they find out, oh, he's not dead. Well, bad news for you and bad news for everybody. Trump at that point goes, we didn't know anything. He becomes Butterfly McQueen from Gone with the Wind. I don't know nothing about birthing no babies, Miss Scarlet. I don't know nothing about any bombing in Qatar. We just found out about it like y'all. It's just such crap. And he gets away with it with this, perverse line. However, give him credit. Because as a result of that, you brought together yesterday in Doha 54 Arab Islamic countries, including Yemen. Yemen was there. Turkey was there. Erdogan, he's more, you could look up Erdogan as like the synonym in the dictionary for two-faced. Al-Jilani, the former terrorist head of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, formerly of al-Nusra, formerly of ISIS, a bona fide jihadist terrorist who 2 years ago was killing his troops are killing Iranian soldiers. Al-Jilani's there, but now he's dressed up as al-Shara. If they changed his name, they got him a $1,000 suit, maybe it's $2,000, shaved his beard, trimmed his hair. This was like the terrorist episode of Queer Eye for the straight guy, okay? Just make him look presentable. He's there talking to Pezeshkian, the Iranian. King Abdullah of Georgia, who's got his head so far up the U.S. ass, he's got eagle tattoos on his ears. He was there. And they they ended up putting together this big declaration that, condemns Israel completely, talks about the possibility of a Middle East peace force, praised the United States for continuing to be involved with peaceful negotiations. But still, it was, and they noted they also didn't attack the United States because last week at the UN, for the first time since when, the U.S. supported a resolution condemning Israel, even though it didn't mention Israel by name. What else? Oh, Egypt, al-Sisi, the president of Egypt, with Pezeshkian, the president of Iran, they sat down, hey, let's get back together. And so they agreed they're going to reopen diplomatic relations. So all of a sudden, we've gone from this era where the U.S. had successfully isolated Iran, no diplomatic relations with the Saudis, none with Egypt, All of a sudden now, they're already back in relationship with the Saudis. Now they're going to do the Egyptians. Oh, and Jordan announced, we're going to start to order up, we're going to start drafting people again. They haven't been drafting anybody into their army for 34 years. Now, we're going to start building our army up. That means they're expecting to go to blows at some point, potentially with Israel. So what did the United States accomplish out of this? We united the Arab and Islamic world. The Sunni mm-hmm. and Shia that normally are not necessarily the best of buds. And Erdogan with the Saudis, you know, so you got Turks, you've got Persians, you've got the Arabs. They all share an Islamic faith, sort of, except even within, you got divisions between Sunni, Shia, and even within Sunni and Shia, you get divisions within there. It's no different than Christianity with all of its multitude of different sects. Mm-hmm. So, and then the bonehead move of the day was Marco Rubio, Secretary of State. So on the very day that these guys are meeting, he goes and meets Bibi Netanyahu. And what is that, to quote Jeffrey Sachs, with respect to Bibi Netanyahu, that sick son of a bitch, you know, that what Netanyahu did is after the meeting with Rubio, gives authorization to launch the ground invasion of Gaza City, massive bombings, killing of Palestinians. Mm-hmm. That may, you know, here's Rubio. Everybody in that Arab Islamic summit, they're going to say, he carried the message and gave Bibi the right, gave him permission to do that. So that now puts him, it damages his credibility, because anytime he wants to go talk to these other characters, they're going to go, yeah, you're just a whore for Israel. That's all you are. You're just a bag carrier. You do what Donald Trump tells you, and Donald Trump is completely bought and paid for by Bibi Netanyahu. So the United States ends the day yesterday, I think, weaker, more isolated in the Middle East than at any time in its history.
It's still a little confusing, and I'm again searching for an answer or your opinion. It seems so almost encouraging, though, that the Middle East is united, not in the sense of East versus West or Middle East versus NATO or even the U.S., but at least they're not interfighting, killing each other, and there's more stability. What do you say to that? Is this encouraging to you that is happening?
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent observation. This is akin to the animals in a game reserve. So you get the lions, the tigers, the emus, the elephants, the jackals, the lambs. You know, the ones that normally they don't necessarily all get along, and sometimes they may eat each other,
mm-hmm.
but they all convene together and say, okay, we got to do something to stop these poachers. Mm-hmm. We got to do something to stop Israel. That was the message. And part of what they considered was creating, let's call it an international Arab Muslim military contingent that would be used for both peacekeeping and possibly self-defense.
Yeah.
Now,
security.
Now, within that, it raises an interesting, you know, the two biggest armies within that group are Turkey and Iran. They don't necessarily get along always, but
right.
Again, there they were talking and agreeing yesterday. So this is not good news for Israel. You know, mm-hmm. anybody that's pro-Zionist, you know, this was a bad day, because now these 54 countries, including, you know, Jordan, because Abdullah, of that entire group, Abdullah's the most pro-Western, love the United States, do whatever I can for the United States guy out of that entire group. And even he was making some very strong statements about this violation of Qatar's sovereignty, because, you know, he's in the same position. He could have assumed, hey, the Americans love me as much as they love the Qataris. And then he's looking and said, wait, they bombed the hell out of Qatar?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he can't necessarily... You know, you can't take the U.S. promises with any kind of confidence.
It's also interesting, too, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Turkey's part of NATO, correct?
Yeah, oh, yes, yes.
So now they're in another alliance. And again, I'm just trying to state facts here, not just trying to state facts. So what does that do? Because they had Turkey with NATO, and then they're in this another Arab alliance.
NATO, Turkey is a confused nation. Mm-hmm. So it really is, up to this point, it's all about Erdogan. He's desperate to get accepted into the EU. They've been trying for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
EU keeps telling them to screw off, you know, go away. He also wants to recreate the Turkish, dynasty that mm-hmm. existed for, 500 years, where the Turks basically controlled the Ottoman Empire. He would like to be the rebirth of that. So that's why he's been meddling in places like Armenia, Azerbaijan. But, he's like that joke about the economists. You line all the economists up and they all point in different directions.
Right.
So, he's helping Ukraine. Oh, he's helping Russia. Oh, he's trying to subvert Iran, but he's helping Iran. I mean, like I said, two-faced son of a bitch is probably the kind thing to say about Erdogan. But nonetheless, he's seen this. It tells you which way the wind is blowing. The fact that he felt it important enough to attend that and to sign on to a statement that condemns Israel. Now, the real irony is, of all those countries in that Arab Islamic contingent, Turkey is the one that can do the most damage right away to Israel by cutting off the oil.
Right.
Man, he's going to have to take a pay cut if he does that. Erdogan and his kids. So, I know you focus most of your programming on money, and you're correct. Always follow the money. That the golden rule, those with the gold make the rules.
Right. So talk a little bit about, we talked about NATO, and pivoting back to really Europe, you've had a French, basically the government imploded in the past week. You right. had, I want to say, 7 assassinations in Germany from politicians on the political right. What is going on? And I was talking to Alex Craner, our mutual friend, Alex Craner.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was saying that, his opinion, and I more or less share it, that NATO is going to really cease to exist because it's irrelevant and they can't afford it. Yeah. They wouldn't afford it without the U.S. What's your opinion on what's going on over there and what's going to happen?
Yeah, I fully agree with Alex on that. We're witnessing the end of an empire, okay? Mm-hmm. An end of a historic era, the colonial era. Let's say it started 1492. So somewhere in the 15th century. So here we are now, almost the start of the 6 centuries later. So 600 years. The Europeans have been sort of the bane and curse of the world. Mm-hmm. Out of Europe have come conquests of Africa, of Asia, and of North America and South America. The Europeans have been in the lead in that. The Europeans and the United States, which is really an appendage of Europe, or was until it became the leader of this whole mess, have really dominated global affairs. And it all came to a head at the end of World War II with the establishment of this Bretton Woods Agreement, the International Financial Order, with IMF, World Bank, the dollar. Initially the gold is the reserve currency, and then the dollar replacing it as the reserve currency. And then the United States, we got to be that college kid that goes off to college and gets his parents' credit card, never has to worry about paying it off. Woohoo!
Right.
We've had 50 years of unrestrained spending.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, the bill's starting to come due, and the world has changed. Mm-hmm. So the colonial era, particularly in its treatment of people in Africa and Asia, was never seeking to enable those people to compete at our level. It was always, you know, they always had to sort of keep a foot on their head, keep them down, never let them get too smart. And there was always tinged with this racism. And surprisingly, the peoples of Africa and Asia get pretty sick and tired of being treated like that. Gee, go figure.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Russia and China getting the constant pressure and threats from the West, finally decide, you know what, we've had enough of this. Let's you know, they started talking about creating BRICS, what, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But it was the start of the special military operation, this de facto war with NATO that commenced in February of 2022 that finally lit the fire under Russia, China, now India, Brazil, to turn BRICS into more than just an idea, where it's an actual financial reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I, out of curiosity, I queried and got the answer. I wondered what has happened to SWIFT transactions compared to 2022 or even compared to 2024.
Tell me.
SWIFT transactions for 2025 are down 15%.
Wow.
Unprecedented in history. Never happened. So you got to step back and say, why is that happening? Well, one possible explanation is that the people are now starting to use digital exchanges. Chinese SIPs is one of those. There's another one, either QRQD or something that the West uses, but that people are recognizing that staying with SWIFT is like continuing to buy buggy whips after the automobile was invented. It's sort of useless. But the other thing is that you have to take into account as a possible explanation is that other countries that used to use dollars in trade are no longer using dollars in trade.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any evidence for that? Well, we see that India and China both have been selling off U.S. T-bills.
Mm-hmm.
We see that Brazil and China have entered into trade relations where China is now buying coffee from Brazil, coffee that used to could be bought in the United States, creating actually a shortage in the United States. You're going to see coffee prices go up there. Then soybeans. You know, when the United States started putting some of this, threatening to put the tariffs on China, China said, you know, you're not the only soybean grower in the world. Turn to Brazil. All of a sudden, Brazil's selling all of its soybeans, except they're settling it in their respective currencies.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need dollars anymore. So all these dollars are sitting out there piling up. And, you know, I have a international economics PhD comprehensive field, but I don't claim to be some great financial analyst. But I think I can figure out if you've got a growing supply of something and a lessening demand for it, the price seems to go down, last I checked.
right.
Which appears to be what's happening with the U.S. dollar.
Right.
So, like I said, when you fold all this in together, you know, I think the tendency is we like to look at the events with the Israelis in Gaza through one telescope, then what's happening in Ukraine through a different telescope, pretending that they're just isolated cones, no connection, no relationship whatsoever. And then all of this trade stuff and economics, oh, that's unrelated. Nonsense. We are witnessing right now the birth of a new international financial order. And I do believe the Chinese and Russian authorities in particular, when they insist, this isn't about creating a new hegemon. We're going to make sure that everybody's treated equal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a year ago, you could make the case that India and Brazil were sort of wishy-washy on this. And then Donald Trump kicked India in the balls. And India didn't like it, you know. And against the arrogance of people like this Peter Navarro and even Scott Bessent, where they said, well, India's our top 10 trading partner. They can't live without us. Hey, India's total exports last year to the United States, last I checked, was $85 billion. Well, that's a good sum of money, except when your economy is $4.3 trillion by GDP.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's actually not, you know, it's, yeah, 2%, 2.5%, not statistically a game changer for your economy, particularly when what you're being asked to do is, oh yeah, you know, all that inexpensive, that relatively inexpensive gas and oil that you're buying from Russia, we want you to pay a lot more on that. We want you to probably jack up your price 50% so that all your truck drivers and everybody that's hauling goods from place to place in India, that they get screwed and have to pay more. That'll be good for you politically. And the Indians go, you lost your friggin' mind? We're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go, the Russia and China, hey, can we get like a better deal? And they're like, come on in. The tent's big house. Mm-hmm. And Brazil is too. I mean, they're in the middle of the BRICS conference. The United States, Brazil has a trade, that we have a trade, U.S. has a trade surplus with Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Not deficit, surplus. And man, we said, yeah, kick them in the balls too. And Lula's like, ah. So all of a sudden, India and Brazil are now fully on board with the BRICS program as well. And they are dead ass serious about creating, you know, they're setting up banks, the alternative financing. China already, I understand, is already making loans to countries in Africa, not pegged to the dollar. So they've all actually getting loans at a cheaper rate. Russia starting to sell bonds, have bonds distributed that are based upon Chinese renminbi. So mm-hmm. I said, the world's changing, and the Europeans are Kodak. Okay? They are Kodak. Steve likes that. Steve, explain why you're laughing.
I mean, I love your analogies. You don't have to say any more. Kodak, you just have me. I love.
Yeah.
What is Kodak?
Yeah. Who could? Hey, we got all this 35 millimeter film. Nobody can take pictures without us. We're not going to change. And then, like, boom, the truck runs over him and go, if I get the license plate on that truck. Because now all of a sudden, you know, I guess it was about 2004, 2005 with the iPhone. And all of a sudden people were taking pictures. And they're not having to worry about overexposing film and opening up the back to load. Yeah. The Kodak had its moment gone. The same with the guys who were making buggy whips back in 1906, where they thought that was still a viable industry. Hey, we got carriages. How can people get around without us? And then, boom, come the car. So Europe is Kodak. Yeah, that's probably the best way to think of it.
So talk a little bit about, and I'm curious here, like, we just bombed a boat, for lack of a better word, a big ship.
It's a boat. Remember, definition of a boat is something that a ship can carry. Okay. So if you can load it, if it's so big that you can't put it on another ship, it's a ship. Mm-hmm. These were boats.
So what was the motivation there? Is it to stir up trouble, or was it just to divert attention from something? Or is this more sinister, to go in and control Venezuelan oil?
Sinister. It's sinister. This is to provoke an incident, hopefully provoke Venezuela to retaliate militarily, so then we'll have an excuse to go attack them. You know, the first story that came out, total bullshit. Oh, there's a 60-foot cigarette boat. It had four outboard motors on it, and it left the coast of Venezuela to travel to the United States with drugs. Okay, go back and look at the photo of it. Number one, those four engines will get you, with the gas they suck up, will get you about 220 miles. Well, you got another 1,100 miles to go to get to the United States. So that means either you have to have another boat coming alongside with fuel on board to refuel you, or you have to carry the fuel on board. Well, I did the calculations. You would need 300 jerry cans, you know, those 5-gallon cans? You'd need 300 of those in order to have sufficient fuel to get to Florida. Well, look at the boat. You don't even see 5 jerry cans, okay? Number one. Mm-hmm. Number two. Well, the boat, you know, the boat has a certain carrying capacity. So where are the bundles of drugs? You know, the bundles, are they in 50-pound bundles or 100-pound bundles? But they'd be stacked up there. And which begs the question, why the hell are you taking 11 people? Because those 11 right. people are just, you know, there are extra weight on board. You could, throw 10 of them overboard, keep two of you, and then you could replace more drugs with that. I mean, it was, the story is a complete lie. Mm-hmm. Everything they claimed, they're bringing drugs to the United States. No, they weren't. So this was just, they happened to be in the unfortunate position. They're out there on the ocean. You know, maybe they were smuggling to Aruba Bonaire. You know, those are close by. They could get there. But, you know, they were not coming to the United States, not with that boat. Impossible. What fascinates me is the media, like a bunch of damn bobbleheads. Nobody asked a question of how do you do that? Is that possible? Like, you know, it's just simple math. You know, I don't do calculus, but I can do addition, subtraction, addition, you know, and multiplication and division. And, you know, okay, 1,300 miles and the boat fluid capacity, 200 miles. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's not going to work. And yet, they that's what they tell you. And everybody buys it.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, just think, if they're doing that with, geopolitical things,
mm-hmm.
then also anything you hear about them on the economic front is probably bullshit too, because they're not asking the questions and raising, you know, how does this work? And let's look at this assumption. And, you know, for that to come to pass, let's just, you know, confuse it, put out a lot of chaff, make everybody confused, and hope they don't ask questions.
Yeah, right. That the only thing I can think of how this would make sense is either it was one of two things, either a false flag to divert attention or regime change.
Regime change.
We
regime
want Venezuelan change. Oil.
Yeah, no regime change.
Wow. So do you see that coming or almost inevitable now to come into Venezuela?
No. You know, because...
Good. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I think it'll be difficult. Maduro is up on the game. He understands what's afoot. They've taken measures, preemptive measures, to prepare to defeat if the United States decides to land its Marine Expeditionary Unit. It's called a MEU, M-E-U. Mm-hmm. They used to be called Marine Amphibious Units, MAUs, but they've gone from MAU to MEU. Pussycats, I guess. There are 2,200 Marines on each of these ships. There are two ships, so 4,400 Marines. Well, it sounds like a lot, but then you got to land out at the coast, and then the road that runs up to Caracas—it's up through a mountain pass, basically. Mm-hmm. And there are ambush point after ambush point all along that road. And I don't care how much air support you got, there would be a number of Marines that would die in that process. Yeah. And you know, Donald Trump wants that Nobel Peace Prize. I think this would put a little bit of a dent in his chances if he decided to go that route. Yeah. So,
Larry.
Yes, sir.
Larry Hill, one of my most influential books early on, just in terms of my skepticism with what we're told in the media, it was a book called The Dictator's Handbook.
Uh-huh.
Talks about just how even the benevolent actions of the government or what they say is never... You know, we're not good people. We're not like benevolent people that are, you know, looking out for other countries. So in terms of with that healthy amount of skepticism about, you know, the news we hear, like, yeah. Where do we get the news that's reliable? I mean, like, how do you, because I don't believe anything. When I hear news, I don't believe anything I'm told. Yeah. So like, where do we, how do we
get Sonar 21 and natural resource stock?
Yeah. besides the obvious people here, like where can we get news that's reliable? Can you give us some sources?
No, I don't think there is one or even two sources. What I encourage is critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So just take the news that's being reported and then start asking yourself questions like, does this make sense? The example I used was with the report of this, this boat's carrying drugs to the United States. Okay, well, how many drugs? because this boat, it's a 60-foot cigarette boat, and depending on how it's structured, can carry between 20 and 30 pounds of cargo, fuel, persons. So then you got to say, okay, we got 220 gallons of fuel in the tanks, and then we're going to need another 1,500 gallons of fuel to get it from that point to the United States. So, you know, do the math on that, how much each of those gallons weighs, you know, start asking questions like that. People don't do that. And it is the, you know, when I was at the CIA, I did an 8-week, call it an internship. So it was during my first year of orientation. I worked on the Afghan task force. This is when the Soviets were in Afghanistan. And I worked on the propaganda side of the house, how we produce propaganda, how we would insert stories into media without the media, the sources themselves, being aware that the CIA was the source of it. There was this French guy named Jean-Jacques Servan-Schreiber, who is quite the lefty. And man, he hated the CIA. And he was convinced the CIA was behind everything. Hell, we were putting stories in his magazine and he didn't realize it. Okay. So, Steve, you raise a very valid point. It's just be skeptical of everything you hear until you can get some sort of validation from some, you know, use multiple sources. But always be asking the questions of, you know, does this make sense? And, then try to rely upon, look for people that have actually had firsthand experience with it and that have a good track record.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
is a good starting point, you know, people are, the leadership is just looking out for their own best interest. Is that a good place to start?
Yes. If you do an economic study of the number of members of Congress who have entered, when they entered office, what was their net worth?
Right.
And then if they stayed more than 10 years, what is their net worth? And then just run the math on, you know, here is what your annual salary is, and you're running two homes, you got a home in your home district, and then you got a place in Washington, D.C., and you've racked up $20 million? Jeez, yeah. You know, they all should be writing the congressman's investment guide, you know?
Right. Yeah. They should be working on Wall Street.
Oh, good God. Yeah. So,
well, Larry, we'll end on that. I want to thank you so much for your time. Again, to all my viewers and listeners, Larry at Sonar21 is a fantastic source. He's one of my go-tos, probably too late because it hits the fan and then I email Larry. After it hits the fan, I probably should reach out to you before it hits the fan.
Well, you know, if you're that prescient, you know, I'll let you become my investment advisor and you start making the stock picks on Wall Street.
Right, right. But I want to thank you so much. Hey, Larry, I shouted out your website, but shout it out for me. How do people find you? And I'll put it in the show notes.
The easiest place is sonar21.com. And we can have Steve back anytime. He laughs at my jokes.
I don't know about that, man. He's taking over the show. No, I'm teasing. So thank you so much, Larry. We'll have you on again.
Hey, good to meet you. Thanks so much. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.